Welcome and thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants are in listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's call. At that time, you may press star one to ask a question. I would now like to turn the call over to John Bateman. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I will be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email, and I will spell it. It is N-E. NOAA.gov. That is nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session at the end. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. If you do not have that link, I will spell it for you so you can download the presentation. That link is https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BRIEFINGS. And with that, I will introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Karen Gleason, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the November 2021 U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor updates. Our second presenter is Blair Holloway, a lead meteorologist at NOAA's National Weather Service office in Charleston, South Carolina, who will review the multi-day coastal flooding event in early November along the southeastern Atlantic coast. And our third presenter is Brad Pugh, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the U.S. temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for the months of January, February, and March 2022. Our first speaker will be Karen from NOAA NCEI.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone for joining our call today. Looking at slide number two, I will review the global average temperature for the month of November. The global land and ocean combined temperature was 0.91 degrees Celsius or 1.64 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. This is the fourth highest for November since global temperature records began in 1880. The 10 warmest Novembers have occurred since 2004. And November 2021 also marks the 45th consecutive November and the 443rd consecutive month with temperatures at least nominally above the 20th century average. As you can see from the map on the left, temperatures were much above average, as denoted by the shades of red, across much of Africa and across parts of North America, South America, Asia, and across much of the Atlantic, Western Pacific Oceans, as well as the northeastern and southwestern Indian Oceans. From the map on the right, we can see that record high November temperatures were observed across parts of the Atlantic, Indian, and Western Pacific Oceans, as well as parts of northern Africa and small areas of eastern Canada and eastern Asia. Approximately 10% of the Earth's surface experienced record warm temperatures during November, which is the highest November percentage on record. Meanwhile, cooler than average November temperatures were present across much of Alaska and Australia, as well as across portions of Greenland, northwestern China, and the northeastern and southeastern Pacific Ocean. The Northern Hemisphere had its second warmest November on record. And regionally speaking, Africa had its warmest November. The Caribbean region tied for second warmest with 2016. And conversely, cooler than average temperatures engulfed much of Australia during November, where they experienced their coolest November since 1999. Turning our attention now to slide number 3. And the seasonal global temperatures for the Northern Hemisphere's meteorological autumn and the Southern Hemisphere's meteorological spring. The September to November global surface temperature departure of 0.89 degrees Celsius or 1.60 degrees Fahrenheit was the fourth warmest such period on record. The 10 warmest September to November periods have all occurred since 2012. This three-month period was characterized by much above average temperatures across much of North and South America, Africa, and across parts of Southern and Eastern Asia, as well as parts of the Western Pacific, the Atlantic, and the Indian Ocean. Record warm September to November temperatures were observed across parts of North America, Africa, the Middle East, Eastern Asia, as well as parts of the Atlantic, Western and Southern Pacific and Southwestern Indian Oceans. Cooler than average conditions were limited to portions of Alaska, Greenland, and Central and Eastern Tropical Pacific Ocean. The Northern Hemisphere land-only surface autumn temperature was record warm for that three-month period, and this value eclipsed the previous record set just last year. On a regional basis, we saw that September to November was the second warmest on record for North America, third warmest for South America, fourth warmest in Africa, and sixth warmest for Asia. Although Europe and Oceania had an above average September to November temperature, it was the coolest such period for both of these regions since 2016. Turning our attention now to slide number 4 and our year-to-date global temperature statistics. We see that the global surface temperature was 0.84 degrees Celsius or 1.51 degrees Fahrenheit above average, which equates to the sixth warmest on record for this 11-month period. And according to NCEI's annual global temperature ranking outlook product, it is virtually certain that 2021 will end among the 10 warmest years on record, and it is very likely that the year will rank as the sixth warmest year on record. Zooming a little closer to home on slide number 5, we take a look at the contiguous U.S. temperature and precipitation statistics for November. Overall, temperature-wise, for the lower 48, the average temperature was 45.2 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit above average. This translates to the seventh warmest November on record. Looking at the temperature percentiles and rank map on the left-hand side of the slide, we see above-average temperatures extending from the West Coast to the Great Lakes across the plains, portions of New England in the Northeast. Several states across the West experienced their second warmest November on record, including California, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. We saw near to below-average temperatures across much of the eastern third of the contiguous U.S. Looking now at precipitation, the overall lower 48 average value was 1.28 inches for the month, which is 0.95 inches below average, which translates to the eighth driest November on record. Looking at the map on the right, we see broad areas of below average precipitation. We did see above average precipitation, though, across portions of the Northwest associated with several atmospheric river events, as well as portions of the Northern Plains, Florida, and the southern tip of Texas. Alabama and North Carolina both ranked fifth driest for this November period. Looking at slide number 6 now, we see our three-month seasonal autumn temperature and precipitation statistics. For temperature, we saw an average for the lower 48 of 56.7 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 3.1 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and that translated to the third warmest autumn on record for the U.S. Looking at the map on the left, we see that the above average temperatures covered the vast majority of the lower 48, with the exception of portions of the Southeast. Montana, Wyoming, and Colorado each had their second warmest September to November on record, and 14 additional states ranked among their warmest five autumns on record. Precipitation-wise, the overall average was 6.81 inches or 0.07 inches below the long-term mean, which is essentially near average. Looking at the map on the right, you see above average precipitation scattered across portions of the West, the Northern Plains, the Ohio Valley, parts of the Northeast, and parts of the Southeast. Drier than average conditions were observed across parts of the Southwest, the Northern Rockies from the Central Rockies to the Southern Rockies, also across the Southern Plains, the lower Mississippi River Valley, Western Great Lakes, the Carolinas, and a portion of Virginia. Washington ranked sixth wettest for the autumn season. And looking at our year to date on slide number 7, we see the average temperature of 55.9 degrees Fahrenheit, which was 2.1 degrees Fahrenheit above the long-term average. That was also the seventh warmest for this 11-month period. Looking at the temperature percentiles map on the left-hand side, we see above-average temperatures from the West Coast to the Great Lakes and into the Northeast along the Atlantic coast as well. We saw Maine reported its second warmest such 11-month period on record, and we did see some near-average temperatures observed from the Southern Plains into the Southeast and portions of the Ohio Valley. Precipitation-wise, for this 11-month period, we totaled 28.06 inches, which is 0.47 inches above average. That translates to a near-average January to November value. And looking at the map on the right-hand side, we saw below-average precipitation across much of the West, the Northern Plains, as well as portions of New England and the Carolinas. Wetter-than-average precipitation occurred from the Gulf Coast states up to the Great Lakes, and as well as in the portions of the Northeast. Mississippi ranked eighth wettest, while Montana was fourth driest for this 11-month period. And on slide 8, looking at the latest drought U.S. drought monitor map that was released this morning, we see that approximately 55% of the contiguous U.S. is in drought. This is an increase of about 7% since early November. We did see drought severity or extent lessen across portions of the West and to some extent associated with some atmospheric river events that have occurred over the last 5 or 6 weeks, as well as we saw drought reduction and intensity reduction across the upper Mississippi River Valley. We did see expansion or intensifying of drought across the Carolinas and portions of Virginia, as well as the Southern Plains, the lower Mississippi River Valley, and along the Front Range of the Rocky Mountains. Outside of the contiguous U.S., we observed drought contracting across portions of Hawaii and expansion occurring across parts of Puerto Rico. And with that, I will turn it over to Blair Holloway.
Okay, thank you, Karen. My name is Blair Holloway, and I am a lead meteorologist at the National Weather Service Office in Charleston, South Carolina. I'll begin on page 9. Between November 3rd and November 11th, a multi-day coastal flooding event occurred, producing significant flooding impacts along the coast of the southeastern United States. The National Weather Service Office in Charleston, South Carolina, has forecast and warning responsibility for southeast South Carolina and southeast Georgia. And we're going to take a closer look at tide observations from this event at two National Ocean Service tide gauges located within this area. One gauge is located within Charleston Harbor, South Carolina, and has tidal records back to 1921. The other gauge is located at Fort Pulaski, Georgia, near the mouth of the Savannah River, and is located roughly between halfway between Savannah and Tybee Island. Fort Pulaski has tidal records back to 1935. NWS Charleston creates a tide forecast for these two gauges at least twice a day and also utilizes these sites to issue coastal flood watches, warnings, and advisories for coastal counties. So why were tide levels so high during the November 3rd through the 11th period? On page 10, we discuss the reasons why. First, astronomical factors were at their peak thanks to the new moon on November 4th and the lunar perigee on November 5th. Tides are normally higher around the full and new phases of the moon, and this effect is amplified when paired with a perigee, which occurs when the moon is closest to the Earth on its elliptical orbit. The combination of the new moon and the perigee produced the highest astronomical tides of the year from November 5th through the 7th. The graphic on the upper right of page 10 provides a schematic of this astronomical effect. In addition to astronomical factors, the meteorological setup was ideal for increasing water levels along the coast and driving observed tide levels above the astronomical predictions. First, there was an extended period of strong northeasterly winds along the coast, which commonly produces higher tide levels. Second, an area of low pressure developed off the southeast coast during this time period, which lowered the air pressure across the region and further increased water levels. In summary, an ideal combination of astronomical and meteorological factors occurred, resulting in significant coastal flooding and multiple observed peak tide values that rank in the top 15 of all tides on record at Charleston Harbor and Fort Pulaski. On page 11, we discuss the statistics for the event at Charleston Harbor and recall that records here date back to 1921. Three of the top 15 tides on record occurred during this multi-day coastal flood event. The peak tide during the event was 8.51 feet on the morning of November 7th, which ranks as the 10th highest tide on record. Also, this ranks as the 5th highest non-tropical tide value on record. On the morning of November 6th, the tide peaked at 8.44 feet, which ranks as the 12th highest tide on record. And on the morning of November 8th, the tide peaked at 8.26 feet, which ranks as the 15th highest on record. Four tides reached or exceeded 8 feet, which is the level where we have determined that major coastal flooding begins. This ranks as the most for any November on record and is tied for the most of any month on record. Six tides reached or exceeded 7.5 feet, which is the moderate coastal flood level. This is the most for any November on record and is tied for sixth most for any month on record. Finally, 10 tides of 7 feet or higher occurred, which is the most for any November on record. These stats and many others can be viewed at the NWS Charleston Coastal Flood Event Database link that's provided in the call notes. On page 12, we discuss the event based on observations from the Fort Pulaski tide gauge, and recall the records here date back to 1935. Two of the top 15 highest tides on record occurred during the event. The highest was on the morning of November 7th, when the tide peaked at 10.45 feet, which now ranks as the fourth highest on record. Interestingly, this is now the highest non-tropical tide value on record. On the morning of November 8th, the tide peaked at 10.11 feet, which tied for the 11th highest on record. Three tides reached or exceeded 10 feet, which is the level where moderate coastal flooding begins around the Fort Pulaski gauge. This ranks as the most for any November on record and is tied for the most of any month on record. Finally, six tides of 9.5 feet or higher occurred, which is the level at which minor coastal flooding begins. This is the most for any November on record and is tied for the fourth most for any month on record. It's also important to analyze long-term trends in coastal flooding to provide context. On page 13, you will see how the occurrence of coastal flooding has evolved over time at the Charleston Harbor tide gauge. We now have 100 complete years of tide data, and coastal flooding has increased in frequency across this time period at the minor, moderate, and major flood levels. At the minor coastal flooding threshold, there were an average of just over 50 events per year in the last decade, 2012 to 2021. That is more than double the previous decade from 2002 through 2011, when the average was about 20 events per year. At the moderate coastal flooding threshold, there were 56 total events over the last 3 years, 2019 through 2021. This is nearly identical to the number of events that occurred across the first 80 years of the period of record from 1922 through 2001. Finally, at the major coastal flooding threshold, 65% of all events on record have occurred since 2015. Though it's not shown here, it should be noted that similar trends are also occurring at Fort Pulaski. Then, as we look into the future, numerous studies have shown that coastal flood frequency is expected to increase even when using low-end sea level rise scenarios from the National Ocean Service. That's all that I have, and from here, I'll turn it over to Brad. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Blair, for that recap of the coastal flooding event. Yeah, this is Brad Pugh at the Climate Prediction Center, and moving along now to page 14. And an update on the ENSO. And on the left-hand side, we have the sea surface temperature anomalies from the four-week period, November 14th through December 11th, which depicts below normal sea surface temperatures continuing across the central and eastern equatorial Pacific Ocean. Those negative anomalies are running close to minus 1 degrees Celsius. We've also observed suppressed convection persisting over the central equatorial Pacific during that same time period. So these oceanic and atmospheric observations currently reflect well-established La Nina conditions. And on the right-hand side is the CPC IRI ENSO forecast moving forward. La Nina is likely to continue through the winter and early spring. You can see the probabilities in the blue bars there, ranging from anywhere from 80 and then declining down to 60 to 65% during February, March, April. As we head into the spring season, transition to ENSO neutral conditions are forecast. You can see by the April, May, June time period, the most likely outcome would be that transition to ENSO neutral conditions. So on page 15 is our monthly forecast for January 2022. On the left-hand side is the temperature outlook for that month. And we're favoring above normal temperatures throughout the southern tier of the continental United States, and also above normal temperatures being favored along the east coast. Below normal temperatures during January are most likely across the Pacific Northwest and also parts of Alaska. There's a large area of equal chances of below, near, or above normal temperatures being forecast, especially across the interior west, plains, and Midwest, as we could have a highly variable temperature pattern during January. On the right-hand side is the precipitation outlook for January. Very typical La Nina type pattern is being forecast with relatively dry conditions throughout the southern tier of the continental United States, with probabilities for above normal precipitation elevated across the Great Lakes and also the Northern Rockies, Pacific Northwest, and parts of western Alaska. Page 16 is the seasonal outlooks, temperature on the left-hand side. And above normal temperatures are favored across the southwest, southern plains, and much of the eastern U.S., with the largest probabilities exceeding 50% for above normal temperatures forecast across the Gulf Coast states. And below normal temperatures are most likely from the northern high plains westward to the Pacific Northwest. And also much of Alaska is likely to experience below normal temperatures during the January, February, March time period. Equal chances of below, near, or above normal temperatures are forecast for the northern plains, upper Mississippi Valley. Typical during La Nina winters is for a highly variable pattern. We could have intrusions of Arctic air followed by warming temperatures. So have a highly variable pattern is expected over the northern plains and upper Mississippi Valley during that three-month time period. The seasonal precipitation outlook is consistent with La Nina precipitation composites, and those feature increased probabilities of below normal precipitation across Southern California, the Southwest, Southern Plains, and then stretching east along the Gulf Coast and northward into the eastern Carolinas. Above normal precipitation is favored from the Great Lakes southward to the Ohio and Tennessee valleys, usually in La Nina winters. During February and March, there's a storm track that becomes fairly persistent northeast across the Ohio Valley later in the winter. Above normal precipitation is also favored for the Northern Rockies and Pacific Northwest. And across Alaska, below normal precipitation is favored for southern coastal Alaska with wetter than normal conditions, most likely for western Alaska. And finally, on page 17 is the seasonal drought outlook, which covers the time period from today, December 16th, through the end of March. And we are expecting drought to expand across the southeastern United States, also parts of the southern plains and southwest, which is typical during La Nina winters. Some improvement is expected over the upper Midwest and Great Lakes. And improvement is also forecast for the Northern Rockies, Pacific Northwest, and also parts of California, which have experienced some wetness recently. The next 2 weeks look quite wet in parts of California. And mid-December through the end of March is a very wet time of year, so some improvement is forecast for parts of California by the end of March. And in Puerto Rico, drought development is likely, while in improving conditions or drought removal is forecast for Hawaii. And with that, I'll turn it back to John.
All right. Thanks so much, Fred. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. And Kelly, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question, and then please queue up the first question.
Absolutely. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one, unmute your phone, and then record your name and who you'd like to answer the question. If you would like to remove your question, you can press star two. And again, to ask a question, press star one, and it may take a moment for the questions to queue up. Our first question comes from Kimberly Haas from the Mortgage Note.
Hi, everyone. My question has to do with devastating flooding, especially along the seacoast of the United States. We focus mainly, obviously, with the title, the Mortgage Note, on properties and lenders. And I know that a few years ago, while working for the New Hampshire Union Leader in Manchester, New Hampshire, we got a report stating that people were not interested in lending necessarily to people in the Hampton area because of excessive flooding and water damage predicted to the house over the course of years. I'm wondering if you have any information which would suggest where flooding might be in 2022 and moving forward. Thank you.
And Blair, would that be something that you'd be able to touch upon?
Not sure that I'd be totally qualified to look out more on like a seasonal basis like that, since our forecasting is really just like a 7-day operational forecast. I'm not familiar with any outlooks for 2022 in that regard.
And if you'd like, Kimberly, this is John Bateman. You can reach out to me at that email address, and I can look into that for you. We have some experts that might be able to help you with that. We can do that offline.
Thank you.
There are currently no other questions in the queue.
All right, wonderful, Kelly. Well, if there are no other questions, I will wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in this conference call. I will end by reminding you to mark your calendar for a couple of upcoming events. The release of the annual U.S. Climate Report for 2021 is scheduled for January 10th. Again, that is the 2021 U.S. Climate Report scheduled for January 10th. And the release of the annual Global Climate Report for 2021 is scheduled for January 13th. Lastly, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site later today. And if you have any further informational needs, please email me at, and I'll spell it again, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. My contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. Thank you.
That concludes today's call. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please allow a moment of silence and stand by for your post-conference.